Welcome to Cars and Comrades, hopefully your favorite communist car podcast. I'm just fucking with you. We're, as far as I know, the only communist car podcast, so you're stuck with us. Anyway, thanks for listening. We got a whole crew here today. Everybody's goes by he, him. But we got Brandon,
hi.
Brian, Zach,
hello,
and me. How's everybody doing?
Doing well.
Yeah, pretty good.
I'm good. It's been a while since you've introed us, and the way you introed us tells me that at one point in your life, you listened to a lot of morning talk show radio.
I don't think that's true.
No? Okay. You would have done well. If you were just lots more racist, you would have thrived in that world.
That's probably true. I am a little too not racist.
Yeah, you have to be super racist to be for that shit.
Yeah. But anyway, we're going to be talking about some shitbox car stories today, which we did originally. We told some stories about that way back. So we're kind of bringing that back. What was that?
Like 3 years ago, I think.
Oh, God, it's been a while. Yeah, we've all owned multiple shitboxes. So it's time to tell some stories.
It's a rich mine.
And honestly, if you remember the last episode, dude, thank you so much for listening this long.
Yeah, that is impressive. You're an OG, man.
Yeah. Respect. Hit us up, man. You deserve a prize. We're not going to give you one, but you deserve one.
Yeah.
Make yourself like a challenge coin out of cardboard or something.
Well, anyway, before we get to that, we're going to start with our usual car updates. And I think we'll do, I don't know, reverse order. So, Zach, hope you're ready.
Oh, I'm fucking ready. I'm so ready.
All right, let's hear it.
I have been working on my Ford pickup that I just bought because, of course, there's already problems with it.
What the fuck?
Of course.
Yeah, I know. A Ford with problems? Who would have guessed?
I'm not surprised, but I was still hoping for better for you.
It's not been too big of a deal so far. I was having battery issues, and I thought I had a bad battery because I took it to the parts store and had them test my batteries. Diesel trucks have two batteries. I don't know if you knew that, but I didn't. There's two to fail. One of them came back as bad, and the other one came back as good. So I was like, cool, it's just a bad battery. Get me a new one. $240 later, I've got a fresh battery in there. That did not fix the problem. So then I was like, I'm going to be smart about this and see if the other battery still has a warranty on it. It was purchased from Walmart, but surprisingly, Walmart actually has a decent warranty on their batteries. And I got a new one for free. So I was like, cool, two new batteries. That'll fix the problem. Well, it didn't. So I had to buy a fucking alternator, which $260 later, I got a new alternator, put it on, drove it, and immediately shredded my serpentine belt because the pulley was the wrong size. And I did not realize that when I put it on. So I got...
Wait, what do you mean the pulley was the wrong size? Oh, on the alternator you just got was a different size than the old?
Yep, yeah.
How the fuck does that even happen?
I've
done it.
It looked fine. Like, probably just wasn't paying enough attention. Just slapped it on, threw the belt back on. It looked good.
Wait, do you guys remember, like, a month ago when I was having charging issues with my Cutlass?
Yeah.
That was why. Because the pulley was the slightly wrong size, or the belt was the slightly wrong size, and it chewed it up so bad that there was enough slack that it wasn't spinning the alternator. It literally,
Holy shit.
There was just black.
I thought most of the time the pulley comes with the new alternator when you buy it.
Yeah, mine did.
Well, so that's what I mean. How the fuck they get
that
wrong?
The alternator came with a pulley?
Yeah, it came with
a pulley. Oh, wait, no. You said pulley, and I was thinking belt. Yeah, I don't know. In older cars, you have to factor in the fact that, like, you know, my motor is from the late 70s and a car from the mid 60s with a transmission from the 80s. It's... You know, I'm that guy at AutoZone who's trying to walk that poor high school student through the catastrophe that I have committed against this vehicle. it does come with a pulley, but that doesn't mean it's always right.
Yeah, mine was just slightly too small, and so the belt was not happy. It took one drive to absolutely shred the belt. Got a whole bunch of belt stuck around the power steering pump pulley. So I had to cut that off, which took fucking forever. But I finally got another new alternator at $260 and got it fixed. It's running well now. We'll see if it holds on. But it
Bro,
all
you're $1,000 into your new truck.
$500, okay. One of the batteries was free, and I returned the other alternator, so I got that money back.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, only $500 so far. Don't make it seem that bad. It's a Ford, but it's not that bad. Yet. We'll see. But that's pretty much all I've been doing. I'm really just making plans for my Subaru. I am fully intending to turn that into a rally car. So I actually met a dude at a show. I overheard him talking about ARA Rally and talked to him for a minute. I got a hookup from him on a cage for like $3,800.
Hell yeah.
I think, which is like not a bad price for a full ARA spec cage. I think.
Why would you spend $3,800 on a cage when you could buy like $6,000 worth of tools to make your own?
I don't trust my welding skills enough. Like, I have the tools to make a cage right now, other than like a bender. I would need to buy a bender.
Dude, but even the cheap ones are expensive. I said that joking, but like, I shop around for every time I get a little money saved up, I shop around for tubing benders again, and somehow they're even more expensive than the last time I looked.
Well, everything is. I mean, it's all just going up continuously. But I don't trust my welding enough to put my life in my hands like that. Like, I can make shit stick together, but I don't know. If I roll over, I don't want to be the reason I died in that way, you know? If I kill myself racing, I want to not have my own shitty welding to blame.
You just would rather it was just your shitty driving to blame instead.
Exactly, yes. I want my shitty driving to be to blame.
Dude, I come to Colorado, I'm giving you a crash course.
Oh, please do. I would be eternally grateful. I'll buy you all the wild turkey you can drink.
That's
I wouldn't make that deal. That's an expensive
deal.
Oh,
I'm prepared to drop that kind of money. I know it's a lot.
For listeners who are not aware, we are planning our first get together with all four of the Cars and Comrades in one place at one time, and Zach is going to try and make this a nightmare for everyone. I won't remember it, but everyone else will kick me off the show. No, you know, we'll see what welder you got, and I'll do what I can. I haven't even touched a welder in 4 or 5 months. It's like riding a bike.
Yeah, I've got a Harbor Freight MIG 220. Yeah. It's nothing special, but it. You know, it's worked for what I needed it so far to do.
I'm actually not even great at MIG. I can do MIG all right, but I'm better at TIG.
Yeah, I don't have cash for a TIG setup. So
I've got a 1-2.
Eastwood has good TIG units for cheap.
Relative. Yeah. Okay. That is a relative thing. They're still like $600.
Well, I guess it has been a few years since I bought mine. The one that I bought was like $300.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's DC only.
Looking at the wrong thing.
It's like their smallest TIG unit, but I mean, I have my complaints about it, but for what I paid for it, would recommend 100%.
Yeah, most of what I'm seeing is in the 600 to 1200 range.
You know, I
don't know if there's a cheaper option, but
dude, it's funny, like anyone over like 24 is already into the old man phase of I remember back when things cost half this much like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, I bought my welder, and I remember it was like I bought it used, but I bought almost the exact same one that I was about to pull the trigger on buying new. I just happened to find somebody who was selling a similar model. But yeah, I think even the new one was $300 to $350, and I got it for like $250, but it came with like the welding cart and a gas tank and some like extra stuff. So I got a good deal on it, but like...
Holy shit, yeah.
Well, I mean, I bought it when it was still under warranty, too. The guy had a shop. He bought a TIG, didn't really know how he was going to feel about it, so he got a cheap one, and then got good at it and used it a lot, so he got rid of that one to upgrade. It was a friend of a friend. It worked out very serendipitously, but yes, I do forget that in the last 3 years, everything has fucking doubled in price.
Yeah, the cheapest one on Eastwood's website right now is $500, and it's actually a multi-process, not even a TIG-specific unit.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
God, I'm never going to own a tubing bender.
Yeah, no, just give up on that dream right now. Honestly.
I really detoured you on all of this. Please continue.
Oh, no worries. What is this show known for other than tangents?
Fair enough.
I was going to say, Zach, also, I know a few other like local Lemons racers that could build a cage, probably.
Yeah?
I could ask around if you're interested in that.
Absolutely, I am. I would definitely love to see what their prices were. And I mean, if they're running them in Lemons, that's good enough for me.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So like, So do you want like a full like cage that's rated for like competition in some series or something?
Yeah,
or
yeah, ARA spec. So I forget what ARA stands for, American Rally Association, I want to say. But I want to be able to pass tech in an ARA rally. I'm probably going to start on like hill climbs because they have a lower barrier of entry, but you do still need a full cage. And if I'm going to put a cage in there, I want to be able to grow into it and be able to do ARA once I get a few hill climb races under my belt and have a little more experience doing dirt road shit.
Are you in the Colorado Lemons Facebook group?
I'm not.
Okay, I'll add you.
Hell yeah.
Or invite you or something.
Yeah, please do. That would be fucking awesome. Yeah, by the way, American Rally Association is ARA. I just looked that up. But yeah, that's been going well. I've got my, I think I've already mentioned it, I've got my rally suspension set up, purchased for it. I've got a lot of other parts to build my motor and make a little more power, which I probably don't need, but still gonna do it because it's fun and I want to make more power.
I'm a big advocate of not racing competitively, just doing it because it's a professional, safe environment to do a thing you enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I don't have any big aspirations of becoming a professional driver or anything like that. You know, I don't think I'm going to be competitive, but, you know, I want to go out there and do it and have a good time. And, you know, I want to do it safely, I guess. So I'm going to...
Well, you have to. They don't let you not do it safely.
Exactly.
So.
They say no, if you try to do it unsafely. They're like, nah, get the fuck out of here. You can't do that. So, yeah, I'm doing that. And might as well ask on air, Bryant, you have any interest in being a co-driver?
Maybe. I don't know if I'd get carsick or not. But,
okay.
And also, my sense of direction isn't the greatest.
Okay.
So I don't know if you want me doing that, but
well,
maybe.
I figured I'd extend the offer. You know, I don't know if you want to do it with me behind the wheel, if you trust your life to me. But, you know, if any listeners are listening and trust their life to me, you know, hit me up. I'll let you come ride shotgun and yell.
I would, but I actually get violently motion sick.
Oh, trust me. You would get extremely motion sick with my driving. I'm not a smooth driver by anyone's definition of the word, so it's going to be a little rough for whoever's in the passenger seat. I apologize in advance to whoever that may be. It's going to be a rough go of it, but it'll be fun, you know.
Do I need a fire suit?
Yes. Racing suit, helmet, and box device is all that I ask that you provide.
I do not have any of that.
I will build the car.
I have a motorcycle helmet.
Alright, well... You'll have to...
I have a bicycle helmet I can wear also.
I think bicycle helmet is the way to go, actually.
Yeah.
Might as well.
I love that mental image.
Just be as unsafe as possible.
I'll do the, like, Lycra bicycle outfit also.
Yeah. that's about it for me. Just fixed up the Ford. The Subi's been sitting for a little while. The Ranger is still in limbo. Don't know what's going to happen with that. I might just try to sell it as is. If someone wants a Ford Ranger project, hit me
up. No one wants that.
I know I've said that. I think I've said that every time I've talked about the Ranger. Like, hey, hit me up if you want to buy this, but no one's going to buy it. It's a pile.
You know what you need to do is go in the comments of the Donut Media videos.
Yeah.
That where they're fixing up a Ranger and be like, hey, if anyone wants to get their own project started.
There you go. Yeah. That's actually a good move.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea. I might start doing that.
Just don't mention to them that you found the one bad Ford Ranger. Yeah, well.
It's more than one, believe me.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. They're all going to think that they can get mine for $500 because apparently Donut has a magical car buying gene that they use to buy cars for $0.
Yeah, kind of what sucks about like those bigger channels, like I know I saw this on Roadkill more than a few times. They're able to buy cars at prices that no one else can actually achieve because there are people who are eager to sell their cars cheap to somebody like famous where it's, I don't know, it's like they're fans, they want to help out, they whatever, pick your reason, but you know where...
Why can't we be that famous? What the hell? I want to buy cheap cars.
We have ethics. It slows you down.
Yeah.
Because every time someone tries to sell me something cheap, I somehow start talking about Stalin and they ask me to leave. I'm just kidding. I only do that at weddings.
That's the best time to talk about Stalin, is at weddings. That really gets people going. I have
done that twice.
And that does not surprise
Brandon. Brandon, I'm just imagining you at a wedding with your battle vest and a bow tie.
You're really not far off base. Like,
okay,
I have a very loose interpretation of formal, but no, there was definitely one wedding where I like talked to the groom, who is one of my closest friends for years, and I was just like, dude, you got to tell your friend to like chill out, or I'm just gonna go on like some Soviet Union rant for the next 2 hours. And he's like, I love it when you do that. Go to town. And I was just being a punisher, but about Stalin and the Soviet Union for hours. Best wedding ever.
Yeah, that sounds fucking awesome.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, I think that's it for me, though. Who's next? I guess that makes it your turn, Connor.
Yeah, I guess that makes me, so oops, whatever. Yeah, so I'm next in the order. So I have a million and a half things going on. I'm going to try and keep it kind of brief, but 350Z... there's a whole bunch of shit that I, like parts and stuff that I've got stacked up and I got to get done. Some of them have a bit of a clock on them, and I'm being very slow about it. But it is pretty much time for me to put in my my steering angle kit, which is basically full front suspension minus the coilovers, which obviously are already installed. But, you know, all the control arms and all that shit is going to be replaced, and it's going to be basically the control arms are just... the geometry has changed so that you can turn your wheels more. So I think, I forget what the factory steering angle you can get is. It's not good on the 350Z. This, I think, gets me to, I don't know, like 65 or 67 degrees or something like that. It's a substantial increase. So you can get more sideways. You're a lot less likely to spin out. There's all these benefits, but it is definitely time for me to install that. And one of the things... I could have waited till, you know, there's no rush for me to get that in, but I have to order some new wheels, and they are 3 to 4 months from Japan. Ooh. So, like, yeah, I kind of have to figure out what's going to fit. Now, the angle kit manufacturer recommends a wheel size, but that wheel size kind of fucking sucks. And I'm like, hey, if I'm going to spend a bunch of money on wheels, I kind of want them to look good, so... If I have to use their wheel size, I will probably get a different style of wheel that doesn't have, like, you know, the chrome lip. Because, like, you need a big enough chrome lip that it's worth it. And if you can only get, like, 1 inch of chrome lip, you just got to get, like, the fucking single, whatever, monoblock wheel, right? No lip, no extra pieces, just get the regular ass thing, because that'll look decent. But they really limit how wide the wheels you can get are and what the offset is. So I think they recommend 18 by 9 inches wide plus 10. That's like kind of a size that would leave me, as far as I'm aware, with a very small lip. I think their measurement is probably a bit conservative, but I've asked in forums and shit, and nobody's willing to go out on a limb and say it's, you can get away with this or that. In the forums, people who are running this kit, you know, people haven't really experimented with it. So what I'm going to do is probably have that installed. And I think I'm going to buy my own tool, because they do make a tool for measuring wheels and wheel offsets. And it's like, it bolts onto the hub and it mounts inside of a tire. So like you, like the tire size that you're likely to run, and it would mount inside that tire. And then from there, once I install the kit, I can actually turn the wheel, figure out what's gonna fit, and then I will basically turn around and buy whatever I can get away with in terms of wheels. So that's coming soon, but it kind of, my wheel options are gonna be limited by the angle kit, unfortunately. And honestly, I'm more about actual performance more than the look of the car. So, which is kind of sucks sometimes, because my car does not look very good. It just looks like a stock fucking car, despite all the shit I have done to it.
I hate that feeling.
So anyway.
I really do. I want it to look cool.
Everyone.
Like, I put so much money into performance parts and things, and then it just looks stock. And I'm like, that's not stock, though. I swear.
My car is the stockest looking car at the racetrack. I am the stockest looking car. And yet I'm like, I have so many upgrades, and none of them are cosmetic. I am just such a... Ugh. Anyway, point being, I have to get that installed. I'm gonna have that done professionally, because one, I don't have an alignment rack, and I just don't want to fuck around with it. And I'm kind of like short on time, so I think I'm gonna get that done soon-ish. but I'm kind of being slow about it. Now, part of the reason I'm being slow about that is because of my other piece of shit car that is, like, really close to sellable now. It's, like, really getting there.
Not to backtrack, sorry. I just, out of curiosity, what brand did you go with for your angle kit?
So I went with FDF.
Okay.
I forget what it stands for, but it's, you know, FDF, their mild Mantis kit. So they have a Mega Mantis kit, which is, like, even more steering angle, but I just went with kind of, like, the regular one, which doesn't come with, like... The other one comes with, like, special knuckles and everything. Mm-hmm. Mine is just upper, lower control arms and, you know, tie rods and offset rack spacers and shit like that, so...
Okay. And then what wheels were you going with? Or what wheels would you like to go with? Because I know you had talked about, like, some works or something like that, right?
Yeah. So my plan is for work, some white work T7Rs. Mm. So they're seven-spoke wheels. I think they look good. But they look best with, like, a fucking fat-ass dish.
Yeah.
Which I can get in the rear. That's no problem. It's just I don't want to have, like, a thick dish in the rear and then have, like, fucking 1 inch of chrome in the front. Like, yeah. that doesn't look very good.
Right.
Like, I'd rather just have... the full white wheel at that point, right? So I'd go with, like, work Kiwamis or whatever the fuck they are without a lip at all is what I would go with if I can't get the size that I want.
Kiwamis are a great wheel, right? I think so. However you say that. They're a cool-looking wheel. I think that you would not be upset mm-hmm. with that wheel. I understand, like, wanting the dish, especially on a drift car. That's kind of the look
that's
to
the
go
thing.
For, but...
That's all it is. It's either I'm going to get the dish that I want or I'm not going to have any dish at all.
Yeah.
And it's fine either way. I have a preference, so I have to know what size I can actually get away with. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah.
And, you know, I asked the, like, place that would, like, do the install. I'm like, can you, like, test fit a couple wheels just to tell me what'll fit? And they're like, oh, we can't do that. I'm like, God damn it. Okay, fine. Because, like, they sell wheels. And I'm like, really? You can't fucking test fit? You can't help me out a little bit?
Right.
No? Okay. Fine, I'll buy a special fucking tool myself to do this. Ugh. Anyway, it's a pain in the ass. But that's so, like, the thing is, because there's, like, a 3 to 4 month lead time, ugh, I want to get that order placed sooner rather than later.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I kind of need to get on that. Plus, it'll give me time to get started in the season and whatever with the angle kit. So yeah, I got that coming. The Camaro is getting close to being able to be sold. The last things remaining are replacing the stripes. And then I got a quote for, like, a full detail with, like, everything to make it look nice. So I'm going to try and do that this week or next week. I had the, which I don't know if I told you guys. Oh, I did. I sent it in the group chat. Obviously, if you're listening to the show, you don't know anything about this. But I finally had my seats in the Camaro reupholstered with brand new reproduction seat covers. And they look fucking good. They're brand new white leather with the 30th anniversary logos and everything. The old seats were torn and faded and shitty. And the new ones, they look fucking sick. They look good. They feel good. They smell good. They're very, 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 very clean. Then I also had the carpet in the rear of the car replaced because the sun has destroyed the carpet fibers so much that, like, if you run your finger across the carpet, it would just, like... you would make a track and, like, lift up a bunch of the carpet fibers like they're dust. I mean, literally, it looks like carpet until you touch it, and then it just crumbles into dust. I've never seen anything like it. It was real bad.
As a guy who has an appreciation for vans from the 70s, that is a thing I am familiar with a lot.
Yeah, so it was pretty bad. So I had that carpet replaced. I also had them try and paint some of the sun-faded plastic interior parts, and they said, yeah, this shit was so dry-rotted that the paint wouldn't stick. So they ended up, they're like, what we did do was we used a heat gun and whatever and heated them up, and it brings out the plastic shine a little bit. It's kind of a, like, it looks better than it did, but, you know, the next owner can replace those. That's not, like, a big deal. It looks more presentable is the point. So... that's all done. It interior wise, it looks like a different fucking car. It is a big deal. It really does change, like, because the car looked like a real project before with new seats, new stripes, and, like, a good exterior detail and everything. This car will actually look pretty good. So, last couple things, and then I will hopefully get it on consignment to, I don't know, somebody else can make it someone else's problem. So that's kind of what I'm excited about now. And then who knows, if I sell that car, maybe maybe I'll have a down payment for a house in the next year or two.
Hell yeah.
We'll see.
That would be fucking huge.
Yeah,
man.
A mortgage is better than rent.
That's what I'm hoping for. That's awesome. Yeah. So yeah.
Oh yeah.
So like we've been looking forward to that, but with interest rates where they are, that's the problem right now. Like we could afford a house, but it's like, but those interest rates are fucking shitty. So anyway, the bigger the down payment, the better. And for me, getting rid of that piece of shit Camaro is one, getting rid of it, which I wanted to do forever anyway. But two, obviously that's where all my money's locked up. So
realistically,
anyway,
what do you think you can get out of it?
I have no fucking idea. Like the range, no bullshit, is going to be from like 12,000 to like 22,000. Somewhere in that range is where the car is. I just don't know where in that range it is. I have no idea. I'm going to wait for a professional to say, you should list it for this much. And then I'll say, cool, do that.
That shit is so wild. I have seen some of my Cutlass is sort of an anomaly in that, like, all of the GM A bodies were for 66 and 67. They were all similar body styles, but it was just those 2 years. Much boxier before then, and after that, they went to that more like fastback style. So it's kind of hard to find the ones of my era for sale. But when I do, I, like in decent condition, like with a good interior and good paint, like 20 plus. And it just blows my mind that I could own something valuable. Everything I own is like a dog shit version of something that could be valuable. But like
the funhouse mirror version.
Yes. But like the car specifically is the one thing that I actually want to fix up and be nice. So if I ever get there, I'm like, holy shit, this could be like a $25,000 car.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is like I have this piece of shit car that I fucking hate, but I'm like, but it could be worth something actually. Like some people would say it's high mileage, but like it's at 82,000 miles. It's not that fucking high.
That's not high.
Dude, yeah, you know, even for a small block, that's not crazy.
Well, but the point being, like some of these cars, like, yeah, the ones that sell for 40 grand are 20,000 miles or less. But I'm like, but 80,000 is like the budget version of that. Like you can get a, you know, cool car that you don't know is a piece of shit for decent price. We'll see what happens, but I want someone to just tell me what it's worth, and that's what I'll sell it for. And it's close now to being able to be sellable. Like I'm making real fucking progress on it, so I'm excited about that. And then obviously I have a million things to do on the Z, a lot of shit coming for that, but I do have to do that angle kit so I can figure out what wheels I can get. So that's everything. That's where I'm at. I don't even know if that was brief. I don't think it was, but sorry. Anyway, next would be Bryant. Yeah. Yeah, you're next.
Yeah, so...
I'm not so good at my ABCs, y'all.
So I haven't done a whole lot. I did forget to mention last time that when I was underneath my Sabru changing the transmission oil like a month ago or two, I noticed that there's a little spot, like a little wet spot near the brake fittings on one of the calipers.
Mm.
So I tightened that up, and the brakes work a lot better now.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, I think at the time I had been talking about how like I was bleeding the brakes and putting all new fluid in and using the special .5 fluid or whatever. Turns out I just needed to tighten up the fittings a little bit. But
love it when the fix is done.
I wouldn't know the feeling.
Right?
Love that.
I love it when I, you know, step on... I love it when I step on the brakes and it actually stops the car.
You know? That's nice.
That is a good feeling.
Yeah, when I was driving my Ford pickup the other day and the serpentine belt got shredded, the brake booster is ran off of the serpentine belt on that truck. So I had no brakes. so that was a little scary. But I got it home and I didn't
hit. I assumed all brake boosters were vacuum operated.
I did too. And I learned the hard way they are not.
Diesels don't make vacuum.
Yeah, no.
Because they have no throttle.
What do you mean they...
Okay, right. Never consider... I don't know anything about diesels.
Hey, me neither.
They don't have throttle.
The only reason They don't have a throttle. They use the fuel to...
Excuse me? Wait, hold on. They're still... Like, they still have to have a certain amount of air for the fuel, right?
It gets as much air as it wants. It's limited by the fuel.
I'm sorry. Okay, wow, I had no idea. I am very ignorant.
That's why runaway diesels are a problem, because if something happens and fuel starts leaking into the intake, there's no mechanism to stop the airflow, so they just keep going.
Oh, I am way more ignorant about
The face that you're making is how I felt like 8 months ago when I learned this. I am
way more ignorant about diesels than I thought. I knew a few things where I was like, yeah, they don't have spark plugs. They have glow plugs, and they use, like, compression to work. Yeah, okay, but I thought it was the same pretty much other than that. Wow. Fucking had no idea. Incredible.
That's how a Jake brake works. It actually does limit the amount of air allowed into it.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah.
I thought that's something to do with the valves.
Again, I don't know a lot about diesels, so I could be 100% wrong. My understanding was that diesels always were just, from their inception, were allowed as much air as they wanted, and then you meter the fuel. And somebody was like, well, what if we install a mechanism to limit the airflow? And that was the Jake brake.
Yeah. Well, I know there's an exhaust brake, which is like a butterfly valve in the exhaust. Mm-hmm. And
maybe that's it. I don't know.
And there's a compression brake, which does something with the valves to, like, open up the valves so that, like, it uses the compression of the engine to brake it more. But I don't know how that works exactly.
So it's just, like, dumping fuel out of the exhaust, basically?
No. It's when you're idle, when you take your foot off the gas, so there's no fuel going to the engine, but you want to slow down with engine braking. There's a way that you do that on a truck. I know this because I used to live right next to the bottom of a hill on I-70, and I would hear them all night. But
speaking
story.
Of another story, I'm just going to throw it out there because we're a socialist car podcast. The diesel engine was invented by a socialist.
Oh, hell yeah.
Just thought I would mention that. We will probably do an episode on that at some point. But yeah, diesel engine invented by a socialist.
And just because we're talking about Jake brakes next to the highway and relevant to how I became a socialist, communist, Jake brakes are so hard to sleep through when you're sleeping under a bridge.
Yeah. Another fun diesel fact, Vin Diesel, not a socialist.
Good to know. I mean, I didn't think he was, but...
Yeah, do we know that for a fact?
Yeah, is he actually...
Actually, I don't. I just assume.
He's like a huge
Maybe
nerd.
He is.
He is.
I don't know.
I know there's a reactionary nerds, but I feel like if you're kind of a nerdy guy, that does point you in our direction.
Vin Diesel, come on the pod.
Another little diesel thing. I started doing the research for an upcoming episode on Wankel rotary engines. There were a few attempts to make diesel rotary engines.
Interesting.
One of them by Rolls-Royce.
Dude, that just straight up sounds like a bomb.
Yeah. Also, John Deere experimented with rotary engines. One of them was 11 liters.
That sounds amazing.
Holy shit.
Love it.
How many rotors was it?
So, just a little teaser there.
But enough diesel facts. Bryant, how's your project cars going?
So, with the Subaru, I was talking with Zach. I got a recommendation for an e-tune guy. So, I've been talking with that guy. So, I think I'm going to do that. But he wants me to do a boost leak test.
Yep.
So I did one of those, you know, when I replaced the intake manifold gasket, but it doesn't hurt to do one again, just to rule out any problems. So I've got a PVC pipe end cap and some fittings and valves and all that kind of shit. So I think I can pump up a few PSI into the intake and, you know, measure how much it leaks and all that shit.
Yeah.
So gonna do that today if I have time. Oh, and I was going back and forth with this tuner guy, just, you know, trying to rule out issues. And I'm like, you know, just for shits and giggles, I'm going to try the Cobb OTS tune, just what they recommend for. And I think that stands for off the shelf. Mm-hmm. It's basically just like a one size fits most kind of tune.
Yeah.
For whatever parts that you have. It is definitely not better than what I have right now. And I should say the whole reason why I'm wanting to get a new tune is, you know, one, when I replaced the intake manifold, I put in a silicone inlet tube between the MAF and the turbo. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, adds a little bit of flow. But I also fixed that vacuum leak, which I think I had had for a while. And I, you know, the first e-tune I had was tuned with this leak.
Yeah.
And the guy that did my first e-tune is not answering my emails. And I think... I checked his Facebook, and he says he's booked solid through the middle of this year.
Ouch.
So I guess, I don't know, he's just in demand or busy or what. So he can't finish the heavily discounted tune that I had before. So I actually have to pay full price now and get a real big boy tune, I think. Or just, you know, put everything back to stock. And
No, yeah, you're never going to do that.
Ooh. Yeah, you're not going to do that. We don't want you to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I did keep all the parts.
Don't do that. No.
Yeah, what else? Oh, I put a
analog boost gauge on there with the LEDs cool. that light up.
Ooh, hell yeah.
Because I am perpetually 16 years old.
Aren't we all? I'm going to have underglow on my car this year. I fucking swear it. So.
Hell yes.
I actually want to put underglow on one of my vans.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah.
That would be fucking sick.
In my green Ford, all of my interior lights are green LEDs. And considering my fondness for like stoner metal and shit, it's the perfect van for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I need green underglow.
Oh, that would be super cool.
You absolutely do. Yeah.
I hated it till a friend of mine did it to his van, and I was like, oh, I just hate the other vehicles I see it on.
I'm so glad underglow made a comeback. It was a mistake to ever let that go.
Oh, yeah.
It's back in a big way.
And now we have LED technology.
Yeah.
Like, it makes it so much better.
Yeah, you can do it for like $12 now that there's LEDs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe I should do underglow.
Yeah.
Let's all do underglow.
A part of me still thinks I hate it, but I just also want to do it. So whatever.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
Dude, you could do...
Now, should I...
You could do RGB LEDs and just have like any color you want underglow at the flip of a switch or like the press of a button. You could program it to your phone. You could have rainbow underglow.
I just want green.
You could have it... Well, you could have it be green or... Red and yellow.
Red and yellow for my other van, but my my Ford van I have named Green Hell, and it is green, and everything inside of it is green, and I'm going to do green.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Eventually,
yeah.
So yeah.
If I did underglow, I think I would also have to put a little strip of lights in the intercooler hood scoop.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
Maybe do the like the Knight Rider. Bouncing back and forth.
Hell yeah.
Red LED. What else have I been doing? Oh, I my mountain bike, I put all new tires on it and got it out on the road and immediately got a flat the first time I was riding it.
Oh man.
So I get to do that again. I noticed that the bearings were a little bit loose, so I got, you know, the right wrench for doing the jam nuts, and I, you know, it's got the old school cup and cone bearings. Once I got those all squared away, it's like, oh, this ride's a lot better. Like, I can go so much faster up hills and stuff. Because the bearings are actually where they're supposed to be. Oh, yesterday I talked to someone that I hadn't talked to for a while, and he's like, hey, didn't you used to have a Toyota MR2? I'm like, yeah, I should probably fix that thing, shouldn't I? He's like, no, I thought you parted it out.
Oof.
I'm like, nope, still sitting in the garage.
Yikes. Yeah, that doesn't feel good.
That's, the greatest insult to a car person. Oh, man. Oh, yeah, that car that you love, didn't you part that out? You're like, no, I didn't. I'm still spending money on it, actually. Does it work? Yeah. No, it still doesn't work.
It runs. It would drive theoretically, but the suspension is still fucked up. And it needs new tires badly. The HVAC system is a little wonky.
I think that's... I don't know if we need any more hands there. That's probably enough.
Yeah. Oh, and another thing, I saw my uncle the other day, and he's thinking about buying some kind of a sports car. So I gave him a few recommendations. We'll see if he follows that. He said, I'm thinking of a BMW 2 Series or similar. And I'm like, maybe you should look at a Nissan 350Z or a 370Z, because it'll be a lot easier to maintain and give you pretty similar performance.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
That's a good recommendation.
Yeah. Also, like, you know,
I'm surprised you didn't recommend a Miata.
I know he did go and look at a Miata, like a brand new one.
Okay.
So I don't know if he might do that, but he lives in Michigan. Oof. So like convertible in Michigan, rear wheel drive. I don't know. I gave him plenty of like all wheel drive hot hatch recommendations also.
Yeah, you can't even buy used in Michigan. It's just a pile of rust.
Yeah. I remember last time I was there visiting family, I was like,
"Yeah,
oh shit, why? You know, this is like a 10-year-old car and it's already got holes you could throw a cat through in it."
Oh, that reminds... Okay, I need to tell a story about that.
Okay.
Throwing cats through rusty holes?
Sort of.
Well, all right, so here's the question. Is this the official transition to Brandon now?
Yeah, I mean... I mean,
go ahead, because I'm done.
Okay.
Okay, I was going to tell... Everything I've done and since we last recorded in order, but since we mentioned throwing cats through holes, I don't know if you were talking about felines or catalytic converters. I started working on my Ford van again, and I've had the doghouse off of it for months since I started working on it because on the rare occasions that I go out there and fuck with it, like, the doghouse is a little bit of a hassle to pull. But the thing is the doghouse operates as the firewall too. So I went out to go work on it last week and found piles of cat vomit and a cat living in my van. I tragically evicted him.
Brandon's a fucking cop. God damn it.
Chairman Meow is going to be coming for me.
You're a van landlord.
A van lord. The most fucked up part of the whole thing was that, like, after I got done working on it, I put the doghouse back on, so, like, this cat cannot continue to throw up in my van. I found two little spots. I'm being melodramatic. He just threw up on this custom-made rug that a friend of mine made and I bought.
Did the rug really tie together?
The rug is pretty sick, but... a few days later, I was working on the cutlass, and I keep a lot of tools in the back of the van. That's what fucking vans are good for. And I opened the door and realized that in the far back corner, there's just piles of feathers from multiple different birds. No evidence of, like, gore or bones or any, just feathers. But, like, this cat has been dragging dead birds into my fucking van and going to town and then just disposing of the remains. I'm not a birdologist, but there was, like, notably three different types of feathers. Yeah, I had to evict a cat. I know the cat. It's a stray that my neighbors sort of kind of take care of. Like, it's not going to come inside, but it's going to stick around the neighborhood. I would feel worse, except, you know, global warming. It's fucking in the prime of spring in late February, early March now. So that cat has found somewhere warm to stay. But in that process, I put a new carburetor on the Ford. It ran like shit, and it turned out that the carburetor that I bought remanufactured had been put together slightly wrong. I haven't finished tuning it back up because I fucked up any air fuel adjustments real bad trying to get it to run right before I realized what they had done. That being said, I have used it for parts runs now. Like, I went to the local construction spot to, like, pick up some stuff. It idles rough, but, like, honestly, above 5 miles an hour, it runs great now. It's just the idle that's fucked up, so... I can comfortably say, especially after I fixed the problem that I found yesterday, my Ford van is back on the road. It feels great because there's been a couple of projects that I've had to, like, pass on picking things up for because I didn't have a way to get them home. I specifically got the van running because I was like, all right, I can't keep buying, like, construction supplies or, like, we have a construction salvage place near my work, and it's great. Sometimes you'll find, like, a whole set of kitchen cabinets for $300.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I found a set that would work perfectly in my kitchen, but I had no way to get them home. They didn't fit in the back seat of my Cutlass. Got the van running, and,
Well, hold on. Could you not make multiple trips, or are they just, like, there's no even component, like, could fit?
Honestly, it's so close. For the most part, I could have made multiple trips. There was, on the one set that I liked in particular... I don't even know if it would have fit because honestly, like, you know, cabinets are usually kind of made for the room. Retrofitting can be a little bit dicey. I'm not fucking afraid of it because I'd rather spend $300 on cabinets than whatever fucking $5,000, $10,000. I don't know. Like, cabinets are fucking expensive.
I have no idea.
But there was one corner cabinet that there was just no way I was getting it in the fucking car unless I put it in the trunk and ratchet strapped it down so it didn't fall out when I hit a bump. It was more the awareness that, like, I needed to get my van back on the road. And I did do that. It is running
now. That's fair.
But even before I did that, a couple of weekends ago, I went out to my shop with a friend of mine. We had to do some work to get his van running because it was stored at my shop. And digging around with my 75 Chevy, that's a 327, 350 transmission. It's always run really good. I just had an issue with a leaky intake gasket that was... I thought I'd blown a head gasket, but it was just the intake. It was letting... coolant into the oil. That was like a year ago, and I just didn't fuck with it for a long time. I fixed all that stuff forever ago, but it just never wanted to run right. I got all that fixed. Then it didn't want to prime, and that was just kind of the bridge too far. I was just done fucking with it. I thought maybe there was something wrong with my fuel pump. I thought maybe my gas gauge was wrong, like, was fucked up, and I just didn't have any gas in it. I did all this stuff. My fucking fuel line immediately behind my electric fuel pump was cracked almost in half. I get presumed maybe just from sitting, I don't know. Yeah, I could pour gas down into the fuel line and it would run for a while because it would pull gas. It wasn't broken all the way. but it would eventually kind of like just be pulling enough air that it would stop really like pulling gas out of the tank and die. So I climbed under it. Dude, like, you know how, like, you say it's going to be a 15-minute fix, but in your heart you know that you're going to be under there for 2 or 3 hours?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I said it was a 15-minute fix, and it might have been 10. It was literally...
Oh,
wow.
It was directly next to a fuel filter, so I just cut out the fuel filter, cut out the section of hose that was fucked up, and replaced it. I had everything I needed. I just had to go pick up some hose clamps. It was that easy. Because it was an electric fuel pump, I put the key in... let the pump prime the carb. It does no problem. Van fires up. I haven't driven it anywhere because once I had that done, I had some other stuff I had to get done that day. So I can't say that it's necessarily drivable. I believe it is. It misfired a few times while I was messing with it, but the van also hasn't run in almost a year. It hasn't fired up in 4 or 5 months, but it hasn't driven in a year.
That could just be bad gas.
I did put a few gallons of fresh gas in it, but it's still like it wasn't warmed up, and I was hitting the throttle, so it would backfire. Bad gas, there can be condensation, so water in the gas, any number of things. I'm not actually worried about the backfiring.
Yeah,
I just want to double check like my timing and some shit before I actually like take it on the road. But I honestly believe that if something came up and I had to drive that thing 100, 200 miles tomorrow, I could do it.
Hell yeah.
And I say that because I have AAA. So if I drive it at 200 miles and it breaks down, they'll tow my ass home. But no, it seems to be running good. And the Cutlass just continues to run. We've had some chicanery around the neighborhood. My neighbor's car got stolen. She had a Kia, so of course it got stolen. But I went outside the other day to just randomly having a flat tire. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, you get flats, whatever. I rode my bike to work, came home, put air in the tire. It seemed to hold air.
Subtle ride my bike to work, yeah. Flex.
Happy to do it. Tremendous. Now that spring sets in the last week of February, I was able to ride my bike on like February like 25th to work because it was like 50 degrees at 8 a.m. So the ExxonMobil riding my bike to work flex. No, I thought I pulled the wheel off after I got air in it, and it seemed to be fine. I sprayed it down with soapy water, nothing. It hasn't seemed to gone down any since in the last week and a half. I think someone deflated the air in my tire. I think that we just have some neighborhood kids being assholes and fucking around with shit.
Very possible. Yeah, very possible.
Yeah, I can't get mad because I was that kid 25 years ago.
I was that kid, yeah.
But now I'm just...
I'm perfectly ready for karma's going to be a bitch for me one day. I'm like, oh man, neighborhood kids are going to fuck with me so bad. Ugh.
quick side tangent. There's a group, I forget what it's called in the UK, that basically does like direct action protests against people with like giant SUVs.
Yeah.
And their technique is to take a lentil, like a little, you know, tiny bean, and put it in under the valve stem cap. So when you screw it down, it depresses the valve.
I love that so much.
That's fucking great.
So they're not even damaging the tires; they're just deflating them.
So beyond that, like I had that problem with the Cutlass, and otherwise it's been good. To expand on that, a while back I kind of realized that the engine in that car, for as much as it's never going to be like a good performance engine, runs fine. The actual parts of my car that are a nightmare are the transmission, because it slips so bad, like third gear is shot, and the suspension. So I finally got around to calling around to a drive shaft shop, because I had one place recommended to me by both a guy I know who is a boomer, hard-ass, annoying motherfucker, and even he was like, no, this place is great, go to them. He hates everything and shits on everyone, but he loves this place. And it is coincidentally three shop fronts down from the restaurant that my girlfriend works at, and she says that they come in all the time and are like the nicest fucking guys and like tip, like are respectful and tip well, which you kind of don't expect
from hell yeah.
That era of person, but whatever,
that's great.
I called them up and I was like, I need to either have a drive shaft shortened or made, preferably made, but depending on the costs I might just have the one I have shortened. He asked me make and model, all that bullshit. I tell him, you know, 67 A body. He asked me a couple of specific questions. I asked him a couple of questions, and he says, all right, well, a new drive shaft, U-joint to U-joint, will be $275. And I'm like, I'm sorry,
wow.
What?
Wow. Yeah, that's
I'm like, are
crazy.
You serious? And he's like, I didn't say, are you serious? I was like, dude, I'm not going to argue at all. That is the the last drive shaft I bought was 8 years ago, and it was $400. My best friend just had to have a new drive shaft made the year before last, and it was $400. I was expecting $400 or more because everything cost a fortune in the last year. I was expecting having one shortened to be $100 to $200. Yeah. If I keep the one that I have, it will be good if I ever swap in the transmission that I want to run in this car. I don't have that right now, but yeah, for $275, I'm just going to have a new drive shaft made. And then because the weather has been nice, if I can find like a 2-day stretch, the one thing he said is he doesn't recommend me doing anything other than putting the transmission in, getting the measurements, and then giving them to him. So the car will undoubtedly be down for a few days. But he also said that if I get him the measurements in the morning, he'll have it to me by the afternoon. Dude.
Wow.
God damn.
This is like my dream shop right here. Good prices, quick turnarounds. Where do I find this?
I mean, granted, I got them off of race season, but I got turned down to a machine shop for doing like engine work a while back. And I talked about it on the show, but you know, they decked my heads for my 455. And they said they would have it to me by the end of the week, and it would be like, I honestly don't remember. I think they said it would be under $200. They had it for me 2 days later, and it was $100. And now, from what I'm told, you absolutely do not expect that during race season. But like, I mean, if it's not a pressing project, I'll fucking wait. Shit, I don't care. Like, but yeah, to have, I love the process of slowly accumulating like the junkyards that I like, the engine guys that like. I'm not going to, like, there's no mechanics in town that I really trust to, like, work on my shit, because, I mean, that's the territory of something I enjoy doing and don't really want to farm out, and also don't trust people to work on my 50-year-old shit. But, like, I was seriously considering making a drive shaft because I do have the resources to do that. I would just have to take it somewhere to be balanced. But for $275, I'm not going to consider working on that myself. The kit that I was...
It's not even worth your time.
Dude, the kit that I was looking at was $250. There's no... No.
That's a no-brainer.
So that being said, I'm like literally probably after this call or maybe tomorrow, I'm putting together a list. Or I actually already have the list. I'm going to go to Summit and fucking buy all the parts that I need. And slim chance I'll have a new transmission in the car the next time we record. But after that, I think probably so. I think because I already have the transmission, but there's a lot of other parts that I need, I'm looking at about $400 with including that drive shaft. And that's with... a shift kit, new, like a yoke, handful of other stuff. I don't remember everything, but like, yeah. $400 or $500, and I'll finally have like a real beefy transmission in that car, and I'm really looking forward to it. I think the transmission has been the single thing that has made that car unenjoyable to drive. And that being said, I fucking beat the shit out of that thing. I've like, now that it doesn't leave me stranded on the highway all the time, I've like, every time I drive it, I just love it more than the last time.
That's great. That's a good feeling.
Dude, you're gonna do so many burnouts.
I don't think I'll ever go anywhere again. I will I will put thousands of miles on that car with it parked in front of my house.
Just roasting.
Yeah, after like I've talked about the fact that I've already picked the front suspension kit that I'm doing. So right now I think financially at the end of the month I'll have the money to do the transmission, the front suspension, and the gutters on my house without dipping into savings. Which is that's my goal. I don't want to dip into savings to do any of this shit. So like if one of those things has to wait, it'll be gutters.
yeah, that's not fun shit. Fuck that.
But there's plenty of work right now. I might do a little bit of overtime so I don't have to dip into savings or anything, and just I think that we're really on a good path so that like by the time spring is really sprung, I will basically have a new car minus the body and engine, which granted I know is not a new car, but a new transmission and new front suspension I think is going to make that thing feel like a different car.
Hell yeah.
I am very
fucking pumped. Sweet.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
Yeah.
Good shit.
And with all like every transmission swap I've ever done was just one single awful day. So if we have a nice day next weekend and I've ordered the parts, I think next weekend might be that day.
Good shit.
Hell yeah. So what you're saying is you have three running cars.
I have three. I have three cars that I could drive if I needed to.
I think that's a first for you.
Hell yeah.
Well, if it lasts for another 2 weeks, it's a first. Because as soon as I got the two vans running, the car got the flat.
Yeah, there's always something going down.
And then as soon as I put air in it, it wouldn't start that night. Because, like, it just had to embarrass me with a friend. Like, me and a friend of mine were going somewhere. And I was like, yo, let's take the car. It's been doing great lately. Wouldn't even turn over. Wouldn't click.
Oh, God. Of course.
No, I had forgotten that I had put it in neutral to let the wheel spin when I had jacked it up to pull the tire. And I did put it back in park. But, like, I guess the neutral safety switch is finicky. So it wasn't, like, all the way in park. The car wouldn't move. But the neutral safety switch was not engaged. So it wouldn't start. But it was like 10 o'clock at night, and I wasn't about to start doing diagnostics to figure out why.
Yeah.
But yeah, for right now. For right now, I got three vehicles that I can drive.
Yeah. Good shit, man. Hell yeah. That's great news.
That being said, I realized that the body on my our, for shitbox stories, the fucking 75 might be the story this week, because I went to go start it and saw piles of rust that had just been deteriorating and falling off of the body while it was parked.
Oh, God.
Oh, that's sad. That is
I got under it and looked at, like, it's a unibody, so you can't really say frame, but there is something that you would obviously and visibly identify as the quote-unquote frame. It's mm-hmm. it's fine. It's intact. There's just some like supports between the rockers or the cab corners and the frame that have deteriorated. I can patch all that up. It's just going to be annoying. I was actually going to go do that today, but after a week of 60 and 70 degree days, we had a whiteout snowstorm today, and then tomorrow it's going to be in the 60s again. So,
yeah, there you go.
Thanks, ExxonMobil. Dude,
it is wild. No, I'm feeling good, man. This might be like one of the most productive gaps in between recordings I've had, at least in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Quick tangent, you reminded me of something, Brandon. I just want to plug this YouTube channel. The channel is Nivlak57. So it's Calvin backwards, number 57. It's this guy, Calvin Nelson, who is the premier tuner of GM 4200 straight six engines. And the reason it reminded me is because a lot of his videos, he does tests by doing drag launches in his driveway. So
what is the 2500 straight six? What
4200. So it's a 4.2 liter straight six that was most commonly found in the Chevy Trailblazer SUV.
Not familiar with it.
But it's an all aluminum dual cam straight six that can be very easily tuned to make like 600 horsepower.
Oh yeah.
Wait, why have I never heard of this motor?
Yeah, this is cool shit.
I know someone that's putting one, or has one already put in a, like, 42 Plymouth, or 41 Plymouth, or whatever it is. But I don't think that project is finished yet. But, yeah, they're good motors if you want to, if you can't get a Barra from Australia, or a 2JZ, or whatever, RB26, you can get this rather large GM engine and put some boost in it and have some fun. It is, I did look it up. It's almost a foot larger in every direction than a small block Chevy.
Oh my God.
So it is a large engine.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, well, yeah. 4.2 liters in a straight six is not going to be small.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Twin cams.
Dude, the straight six in my Ford is 300 cubic inches.
I don't know conversions. 4.
It's a 4.9 or 5.0. Like.
Oh yeah, yeah, of course, because the 302 is a 5.0.
Yeah, and yeah. I don't think that I don't think that those 3 cubic inches actually like take you from 4.9 to 5.0. I think it's just the nomenclature that they've chosen.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. They rounded up a little.
Rounded one up and one down. Yeah, I mean, my straight six isn't that big like dimensionally, but it's. 4.9 liter. But I mean, it's a pushrod motor, it's not overhead cam, so that makes a big difference. Yeah, spatially
that does.
Well, and when I was racing Lemons with the 1950 Dodge pickup, it had a flathead straight six that was like 3.5 liters, whatever that is, and just looking at it, it was about the same size as my Miata's 1.8 liter engine.
Damn, that's crazy.
Twin cam.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, straight sixes kind of just are the size that they are. Even if you reduce the bore size, they're still just six cylinders long.
This is a long stroke, you know, truck motor, and it only had like 4 main bearings or whatever. Wow. Or what is it, five main bearings? Whatever. It had, you know, fewer than a modern engine would have. So it is a shorter engine, and it's, you know, shorter in length, and then shorter in height because it doesn't have... It's a flathead. It doesn't have any valves in the...
Was that the Hurricane straight six?
No, it was the one that was... I think it was just called the Chrysler flathead straight six. It was in every, like, Chrysler and Dodge from, like, 1932 to, like, 1955 or something like that. It was just the base motor.
I can't remember, but I feel like the Hurricane that I know might have been an iteration of that motor.
Maybe. I thought the Hurricane was a like a Nash or Rambler design.
It was in Jeeps, I know. I've seen it in boats a lot. I don't know. Okay. Like I thought that was, I don't know. I don't give a shit about flatheads.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's pretty terrible. I did, okay, another side tangent. Kevin, the guy that owned the truck, he eventually put like a 5.9 Magnum Dodge motor in it. So it actually runs and drives really nice now. But what I was telling him is he should have done a an opposed piston engine where you take a second flathead straight six and turn it upside down with the pistons meeting in the middle. And because it's a side valve engine, you could do that. You just have to have like a very long chain connecting the flywheels together.
That seems crazy.
I don't...
And
God damn it, why is that so funny? When you aren't opposed piston engines like crazy efficient?
I mean, the idea is that you can get a really high compression ratio. It also expansion rate. So like most opposed piston engines are two strokes, like two stroke diesels. The reason why you want that is you can... I think we talked about this on the Bill Lear steam. Anyways, that was an opposed piston steam engine. But with a two-stroke engine, you can have asymmetric port timing with the like intake and exhaust. So it lends itself to better efficiency in that regard. I don't remember all the details on that. But like the Napier Deltic engine was like an opposed piston two-stroke diesel that was in like locomotives. In the 60s, I think.
Interesting.
50s, 60s. It wouldn't necessarily help you any with two flathead motors. It would just give you more displacement and slightly higher compression. But
well, there's no replacement for displacement.
I don't know. And you'd have like another 2 feet of engine sticking up above the hood. Also.
Yeah.
And another 700 pounds of cast iron.
Also, I would have no idea how you would oil the... how you would oil that.
Yeah, that's another...
Yeah, I think the way to go would be laying them on their side.
Yeah. Where are you going to fit? I can't imagine where you'd fit that, but, you know.
Over the wheel wells.
Right.
It would basically be like an inside-out Subaru motor.
Yeah. And we're talking shit boxes that we used to own or maybe currently own. What made them terrible? What made them great? So, Zach, why don't you start us off?
Hell yeah. I think I refrained from talking about my Subaru last time because I believe Connor was talking about his Subaru, and I didn't want to disparage Subaru that much in one episode.
That's right. That sounds right.
So I think...
This is a different Subaru?
No. Well, it's not my current Subaru. This is the...
Okay, that's what I meant.
Yeah, sorry. It's not my current Subaru. My first Subaru, which was a 1999 Legacy Outback Limited, which was...
I can picture it now.
Very, what's the word I'm looking for? Lovingly nicknamed the Dubaru, because we used to hotbox the shit out of it. It was a shitbox, but it was a fantastic shitbox. It had close to 200,000 miles on it. I'm not sure because the speedometer stopped working, and the speedometer is tied to the odometer. No idea what the mileage actually was.
That's how I keep the mileage low on all my cars.
Yeah. It's a great method. It was the naturally aspirated 2.5 liter with the 4-speed automatic transmission, which means it got up to 60 in a blistering eventually. It leaked oil the entire time I had it. Like, the entire time. I would put oil in it, like, at least once a month. Sometimes it was, like, every other week. It was a wonderful car, though. I loved it so much. It had heated seats, all leather interior, two sunroofs.
Two?
Okay. Two. It had one for the front and one for the rear.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, this thing was mint. In 1999, this was, like, the hottest Subaru you could buy. But I did not own it in 1999. I owned it in, like, 2017. So it was pretty rough by the time I got it. I overheated it one time so badly that the coil packs melted to the spark plugs.
Oh, no.
I had to use a hole saw to cut the coil pack out of the spark plug tube. Like, just drilled it out.
Wait, so a hole saw, so you cut off, like, the ends of the coil pack and, like, just poured out the middle? Oh, man, that is...
Yep, exactly. Just snap the coil pack head off. And fucking went at it with it.
Oh my god.
Which is not easy to do on a Subaru because you've got a frame rail.
That's right. Oh my god.
But I made it work and got the coil packs out, got the spark plugs out, replaced the radiator that blew, replaced the thermostat, new plugs, new coils, and sent that bitch back on the road. And it fucking took it, man. It blew up a CV axle one time, just completely quit in the middle of the road. Blew the CV axle and it just would not go. It was always causing me problems like that. But I drove that thing for several years and it never let me down.
It sounds like it constantly let you down.
It never let me down. It overheated one time and it blew up a CV axle the other time. And it would leak coolant and it would leak oil. And, you know, it was great though. It was a trooper. I continuously broke it.
It reminds me of one time I explained to somebody that a Chevy can never die because it's so easy to replace the engine, the transmission, the rear end. And they were like, it just sounds like your Chevy's constantly dying.
It sounds like it's just Frankenstein
at that
point.
It's like a zombie car. Yeah, it's a zombie car. It just keeps coming back to life. You know, you kill it and it just revives. So
if I could drive it to work, it's not dead. Sorry. I don't.
Exactly.
No other rules.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It had a.
Also, if you've ever listened to the exhaust note of a 3800 V6, they do sound like they're dying.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it was a great car, despite being a shitbox. The stereo in it was terrible. All the speakers were terrible, but I had the cassette to aux cord adapter in there.
Yeah.
And I would just blast death metal in there, and it sounded fucking terrible.
True mark of a shitbox, yeah.
It was fucking awesome, man. I loved that car. It ran pretty well for the time that I had it, and I ended up selling it to a guy for, like, I don't know, not very much money, like $1,000 or $1,500, because the brakes were warped on it, so every time you hit the brakes, it would just shudder. You know, that was a little scary, but it still ran when I sold it. So I consider that a win.
That's quite a win, yeah. I feel like a shitbox is, like, something that, like, you own, and then the next owner is a junkyard. It's unusual that there is another owner after you. So that is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was great. And that started my love of Subarus. I was like, this car cannot
that
die.
That started your love of Subarus. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of things are making sense now.
It was a piece of shit.
A gross misconception started your love of Subarus. These things live forever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was a piece of shit, and it did kind of break a lot, but it just kept going, you know? Shit would break, I would fix it. It was cheap to fix. I ran it into the back of somebody. I wasn't paying attention and slammed into the back of someone, and I just junkyard fixed it, you know? Just got a new hood, a new front bumper, some new headlights, slapped it all on there, fucking kept going, you know? Every time something would go wrong with that car, or I would fuck it up because I fucked it up a lot. It also got rear-ended at one point, and I just didn't do anything about that. I just took the bumper off because it was hanging on by a thread and ran it with no rear bumper for a little while. Yeah, the thing was a tank, man. Took me to the mountains constantly. We would pack it with dudes. Like, I had a roof rack for it, so, you know, going snowboarding and stuff, we would just pack six deep in this thing. One dude's in the back just chilling in the hatchback. All the boards on top, one of them stuck in the back over the back seat, and a guy, you know, just curled up in the back there, and of course smoking the whole time, just because fucking it's the Duper room, man. Like that was the vibe. It was a great car, but it was definitely a shitbox car. Like it took its lumps and it just kept on ticking. Yeah, I loved it. That's my Subaru origin story.
Nice.
All right.
Yeah.
For my shitbox story, we're going to talk about my second car. The first one was a different kind of shitbox. I never actually drove it, so it's a different kind of story. But for the my second car I bought off a friend who, it was a shitbox when he owned it. So it was a 96 Toyota Camry. With the 2.2 liter and a 5-speed manual transmission.
Nice.
It was beige. I believe the color was actually champagne.
As it should be.
Yeah, it was great. And it was a 2-door. And it had like a little like subtle spoiler, but like honestly, It did not look bad for a fucking Camry.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my like first like real car that I drove and owned and whatever. I bought it for
what year was it?
It was a 96. I bought it for $1,200. I think it had like, I don't know, 120,000 miles or something when I bought it. It was a pretty good deal, sort of. Although I did know the owner and I knew that car was beat to shit. All right. So it was like the car that a friend of mine had for years in high school, or like 2 years or something. So then I bought it after high school. And by the time I bought it, I think it already had like Sharpie graffiti and stuff on the interior. And like, it was already a hunk of shit. Like this thing was, it was not well cared for before me. And I did my best to care for it, but, you know, there's only so much I could do. Before I purchased it, and as I was making the decision to purchase it, I actually performed a brake job on it, because they were fucked. So I did the brake job, and I forget why. I think, and this is like an omen for what this car was going to be, but I did the brakes, but earlier in the day, I had been, like, stung by a bee. And so I took some Benadryl. And I worked on this car, did a brake job, full thing, didn't realize how the Benadryl had actually affected me until I did the test drive. And when I did the test drive, I went over some railroad tracks. And one of the wheels came off.
Oh, no.
That's not supposed to happen.
Yeah, I didn't... The lug nuts were all hand tight. So that was my bad. Apparently, Benadryl fucked me up a little bit. Who knew?
Yep, been there.
Yeah,
been there.
It'll do that, yeah.
Yeah, the rest...
Did you see the Hat Man?
I was going to ask if you saw the Hat Man.
Dude. And, I mean, that's just, like, a fun story that, like, that's... And then I bought the car after that.
Did you just feel bad that you knocked one of the wheels off? So you're like, ah,
I was already going to buy that car anyway. It was a cheap hunk of shit, but I was like, eh, it runs. You know, whatever.
Wait, how much did you pay for?
I think it was like $1,200.
Nice.
I mean, it's nice. Yeah, cannot argue with that. Now, granted, it only made it to 160,000 miles before I blew a head gasket and had to send it to a junkyard because I just wasn't willing to pay to fix it. But like, in the time that I owned it, it saw, I mean, all kinds of shenanigans. I was a young man. We did shenanigans in that car. You know, it was had cigarette burns in it, graffiti. It was. Apparently, which you reminded me, actually, as you were talking about how you rear-ended, so I was like, oh, yeah, that was my first car accident. I rear-ended somebody. And it was so funny. I was going, like, 30 miles per hour on a, 30-mile-per-hour street or something. Maybe I was going 35. I don't remember. I wasn't, like, going crazy. But it was raining out. And someone started to brake to make a turn. There was a car between us. They darted out because they weren't prepared for it. And then I saw the car. And I was like, oh, that's okay. I'll step on the brakes. Every wheel locked up on that car, and I just sailed right into them. It was like not even. I was like, "Oh, every wheel, no resistance, right into the back of them." So I didn't fix anything on my car. It dented a bunch of shit, ruined the hood, all that stuff. I think it like busted the hood enough that I'm trying to remember. I don't remember at what point there were bungee cords that held the hood down and duct tape, but that was how it ended its life. Is the hood just did not work anymore. I can't remember if it was the car accident or the fact that when I did an oil change, I sort of closed the hood, but not all the way. And then I was going very fast on my test drive when the car was running real nice. And the hood came up onto the windshield. And I'm going like, I'm on a curvy road with some friends in the car. And I think I was going like 60 or 70 miles an hour. And the hood came up and fucking smacked the windshield. And I had to like, look underneath the hood as I'm driving and slow down and whatever. And then, you know, we put it down and I think I'm pretty sure that's when, so it was already like bent and stuff. And then that happened and I had to like, you know, the hood had to be held down by bungee cords and stuff. Or was it, hold on, actually, no, there was another time. So that happened. It bent the hood, fucked it up. And then there was another time where I was driving that car. I'm pretty sure from like a folk punk concert. Because I remember there's pictures of this where we're on the side of the road repairing the hood with bungee cords.
Do you remember who it was? I'm very curious about that.
It was Planet X Fest.
Enough said. All right.
Okay. Yeah. And so this was the first and only time I ever saw Defiance Ohio.
I hate them.
Really? I love them.
They are the band that single-handedly turned me off of folk punk.
Really? Oh man. Yes. I am still into.
I used to be very, very deep in folk punk. More so because the community that grew up around folk punk were the nicest people, and you could always find a couch to crash on in a town you didn't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I fucking hate Defiance Ohio with every fiber of my being.
That's okay. We'll have to have a conversation about that at some point because that's fun. I forget some of the other bands that played, but I'm pretty sure Taxpayers played, if I remember correctly.
Oh, nice.
And
love Taxpayers.
Who else?
I am played? One, but I'm not familiar with the band.
I can't remember if Ramshackle Glory played or not. I think they might have, or it might have been another one of his bands, which, you know, come on, there was a million of them. But anyway, it was a fun show, but I'm pretty sure it was back coming from that trip, the hood came up again, and there's pictures of us on the side of the road, which, like, the hood came up and hit the windshield, but then also came off one of the hinges, and it was a whole fucking thing. Anyway, it was a shitty old car, but it was fun. I had fun with it. It was fast. I think I raced a early 80s Trans Am once and won. Not because not because that car was fast. It's because those Trans Ams were fucking slow as dick.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, those Trans Ams made like 130 horsepower.
They were bad. Yeah, so it was not that impressive. But like, yeah, you know, for a whatever 17, 18 year old kid, I had some fun with it. So that's my shitbox story there.
Yeah, that was during the era of GM when they were like, how can we have a V8 make 1/4 of a horsepower per cubic inch?
Yeah.
6-to-1 compression ratio. Rev limiter at 1,300 RPMs.
Yeah, like, but, yeah, so that's...
And still get 11 miles.
Duke, oh my god, for real, yes.
Yeah, so that's all I got, but unfortunately I do have to jump off, y'all, because I gotta get moving here.
Oh, that sucks, because what I was going to do today is very reminiscent of what you're doing. You inspired me. I changed course here at the last minute.
Okay, oh my god. I can stay on for a couple more minutes. A couple more minutes, and I'm gonna jump off.
I'm gonna go next, just to accommodate Connor. Sorry, Bryant, I'm cutting in line.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Go for it.
I don't think
I'll have to listen to this episode later just to hear the Bryant story.
I don't know if I've ever talked about this car with you guys, because in some ways it was very inconsequential to my life. But I grew up in a very sheltered house. I was never supposed to turn out the way that I have turned out. When I went to college, my parents were like, "No, you need a car that you can rely on." And so, this was 2002. They got me a 1995 Pontiac Grand Prix. My previous car had been an older model Grand Prix. It was fine. It was nothing special. I liked it. I didn't understand why I had to, like, quote-unquote upgrade. It got me through 4 years of college. No problems. This was, like, well before my tenure as a car guy. I'm not sure I ever changed the oil in this car. It was... if it was a shitbox, if it lived up to that name, it was purely because of what I did to it. when I moved to Philly, first order of business was, you know, I pack everything I own into this car, and then I drive to Philadelphia. And like an idiot, I do not unpack that night, and when I wake up in the morning, I am missing one window and all of my personal possessions.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
No, because 22-year-old me was a non-functioning crazy person, I was purely like, oh, no, my guitar. And... everything else, I was like, whatever, man, I'm free now. I literally left for New York later that day. I never replaced the glass that got busted out. There was evidence through, like, I was living in a punk house at the time. I would occasionally come out and there would be clear indications that homeless people had been sleeping in the car. And I'm just like, whatever, man, if you need a place to sleep, why not the back seat of my car? We used to go dumpster diving, and I was the only one in the house that owned a car. There was like 6 or 7 people living in that house, but everybody else just had bikes, and I had a bike and a car. And I to this day, I do not know if my suspension was fucked up or if we would just get so much shit from dumpsters that with 4 people, there was a juice factory like half an hour north of the city. It was kind of like Naked Juice or any of that shit. There was a couple of trips where we dumpster dived enough to fill up an entire refrigerator, like Tetris'd in, a mini fridge, and a case, like a, not even a case, but like a giant cardboard box that we put in the backyard because it was winter. So we were just like, drink those first, whatever. There was one trip from that place that we had to stop in the middle of the drive home to just throw some out into another dumpster because the suspension was bottoming out and my wheels were dragging in the wheel well. Eventually, baby little me had to get a job. So the logical choice, because I had this marvel of automotive engineering, was pizza delivery guy. And
yes.
Hell yeah.
I honestly, I feel like looking back, I was like the seminal pizza delivery guy, dude. I was like just the crusty punk who like had no idea what was going on in life, just beat the shit out of his car on an hourly basis. There was at least twice during snowstorms I slid into telephone poles and then just kept on my way to the next delivery. And like honestly, it delivered pizzas for me for like a year and a half, and like
that's a good shit box,
dude. I think that's that when capital, it died really. It still had the back windshield busted out. I don't remember, but I'm almost 100% certain that it never, it was a two-door, so it would have been like the driver's side rear window, and it was just like, I'm like, no, that's not worth it. When am I gonna have $200? So yeah, I just beat the shit out of it until one day I was pulling into work and I had actually had already signed up to for the trade school to get my CDL and start driving tractor trailers, and I was just waiting for all that shit to start, and I pulled in to pick up the delivery. I was actually like, my first pizza delivery job was a local place and I was making like actually really good money. In 2007 I was averaging $18 an hour delivering pizza, and I was taking a stack of roughly six pizzas home to the punk house that I was living at every day.
That's a sweet gift.
When you take so much pizza home that a group of six to eight punks are like, dude, we're sick of eating pizza. You have won at pizza.
You have won at pizza.
And yeah, so like the last few months of its life, I was actually working at a Domino's. I was living in like bumfuck New Jersey with a girl I was seeing, and I pulled in to pick up my delivery, and just suddenly it was a whole bunch of neutrals in that car. And yeah, I don't talk much about that car because it really wasn't anything special, but like it was deeply reflective of where I was at in my life at the time.
Yeah, which a whole bunch of neutrals is definitely like a metaphor for a lot of people.
I just get like that. A raging piece of shit that shit like had no reason to even still be on the road, but was just kept on chugging along. That was where I was at in life, and I loved that car. Not at the time. Looking back, at the time I was just like, whatever, it's a car. But looking back, I'm like, wow, that there was a lot of dumb shit that I couldn't have done without that car. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And you know, I think it set me on the GM path for the rest of my life. I've owned two imports, and everything else I've owned has been a GM product. So, and those two imports were both one was given to me, and one was $500.
Well, and you have a Ford also.
Yeah, can't forget.
I try to forget the Ford. No, I mean, like, okay, yes, fair enough. I guess I've had more non-GM products than I like to remember, but. I think three is still it, but yeah, even after that, I found like a $500 beater just to get me back and forth to the trade school I was going to, and after that, started driving tractor trailers, and that was its own shit box. It was a 5-speed. It didn't have third gear, and for a brief period of time, I lived in it because I had lost my job. My girlfriend was deeply in debt and just said, fuck it. I'm just going to drive around and sleep wherever I'm parked for the night.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, the shit box isn't the car. It's the life.
Yeah.
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 I was manifesting shitbox.
If you have a shitbox car, you've got a shitbox life. Like, let's be honest.
Well, I would disagree because now my life is pretty together, you know, relatively speaking. And I own shitboxes because they're diamonds in the rough.
Yeah. There's a difference, though. There's a difference between a shitbox and a diamond in the rough. A true shitbox car has no redeeming qualities, really. At the end of the day, it's just
it's never going to get better.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no up from there. It's just going down.
I don't know, man. My sister had a shitbox CRX when I was like 12 years old that if she still had that in the same condition, it that would be a diamond in the rough now. So
Onyx is worth a lot of money.
I think the difference between a shitbox and a diamond in the rough, you don't know for 10 years after you've gotten rid of it.
Yeah.
It's about the future of the car, not the present.
Future is unknown, man. But yeah, I was actually going to just talk about any of the stable of, like, shitboxes, like, things that barely run. Like, my one van, I had to, like, start it from underneath the fucking vehicle. Like, I had to, like, turn the key on and then get underneath it to start this, like, hit the starter with a screwdriver to, like, bridge the gap because my wiring was so fucked up. I had two separate fuse panels because so much stuff was fucked up. I was just started rewiring it piecemeal. But yeah, that was, like, after I learned kind of what I was doing and could keep it running. The Grand Prix was just, it just kept going no matter how badly I treated it. And I put, God, I don't even know, I put tens of thousands of miles on that thing. I don't know, I had it for 7 years-ish? Six, 7 years?
Oh, shit.
Six years.
Wow.
Well, that's a long time.
Yeah. Ship, it made the trip from Pennsylvania to Georgia and back numerous times.
Yeah, can't argue with that.
Yeah, good car.
Damn.
Well, anyway, on that note, I gotta run, y'all. But you guys have a good one, then.
Take it easy.
Oh, yeah, brother.
All right.
See you. Good night.
Bye.
All right, Brian, it's on you now.
All right. Well, I am gonna talk about, I believe it was a 2003 Kia Spectra. And this was, I forget if we were recording when I talked about this. This is when I was working at Target, I think. So this would have been around 2009 to 2012, somewhere in there.
Damn, it's a pretty new car.
Yeah, you would think that.
It was a Kia.
By the time
it was a 6-year-old Kia.
Yeah, That's fair.
It felt a lot like a 2004 Ford Escort. I mean, excuse me, a 1994.
When my sister crashed her fucking CRX, that's what she got. A Ford Escort hatchback.
Yeah. Which I think they were both based on the same Mazda chassis, so maybe they're...
She loved the CRX and hated the Ford. She felt like my parents were punishing her for giving her that car. And in retrospect, like at the time, I was like, they seem like kind of the same car. Looking back, the Blue Oval definitely did knock it down a few rungs, so I get that.
Yeah. I mean, the Kia and the Ford and the Mazda are all related, I think. The Honda is not. But yeah, so yeah, it did feel like, you know, 20-year-old car when it was, you know, four or five.
For what it's worth, it probably felt like a 20-year-old car when they drove it off the fucking lot brand new.
Yeah.
This was base level steel wheels, roll down windows. What else? Oh, the dash was already cracked.
Okay.
Of course.
That was quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. The sheet metal seemed very thin, like it got a couple dents, like in parking lots or whatever, and they started rusting because the paint was also very thin. And this was a car that I am very grateful my parents helped me get, because they're like, you know, you're taking the bus or riding a moped to work. Maybe that's not the greatest, like when there's bad weather or like if you want to find a job that's further away. So they did help me out a lot. I got a better job that paid better. I was able to go back to trade school and, you know, get an even better job after that. So I am very grateful that they helped me get this car. Having said that, let's continue going over the faults of it. So it was a 5-speed transmission, which I have to say, the transmission was great. Like, the shifter feel was great. I think because it had a metal rod for the linkage rather than cables. So it was a very direct feel in the shifter. It did have like it felt like a 2-foot-long shifter handle.
Yeah,
it was like a, I don't know, 1990 pickup truck in that regard. It had the 1.8 liter engine, which I think is an evolution of the Mazda BP engine that's like in the Miata and stuff. Because the forerunner to the Spectra was the Sophia, which actually just had a Mazda BP engine in it, and also looked very similar to a Ford Escort. And then after the one I had, the Spectra, they called it the Forte. I forget what it's called now. But let's look at some stats. So it's a 1.8 liter 4-cylinder, 114 horsepower, 152 newton meters, whatever the fuck that means.
That's roughly the same power as an 88 Trans Am.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know if you actually know that or if you're assuming, but I believe it.
I believe it. I don't know.
0 to 60 in 9.7 seconds.
There you go.
It says, 27 miles per gallon, but I got better than that. I think I got like 32. But yeah, it was white, so I called it the refrigerator white appliance mobile. And to celebrate this fact, I created a Facebook group called the Refrigerator White Appliance Mobile Appreciation Society.
Nice.
So feel free to join that group. no one has posted in it since 2016. I also experimented a little bit. I got the, what do you call it, the contact paper that you like put in cabinets and stuff. I got the wood grain stuff, so I put wood grain paneling on the side of it.
Nice. I think...
If I may for just a moment.
Go ahead.
I looked it up, just so we know. A 1982 Pontiac Firebird Trans Am. That was the 305 motor. It got 145 horsepower.
Okay. Ooh. I was not far off.
A 240 pound-feet of torque, so it was, you know, more torquey, but at 300 cubic inches, if you don't have torque, like, what the fuck have you done to this motor?
Right.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if we ever sell merch, we got to sell white refrigerator appliance mobile appreciation society shirts.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, we should print some sort of kind of t-shirts.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Even if we only print four of them for us.
Hit us up, listeners, if you own a screen printing business or whatever.
We need to print seven so both of our listeners can have one too. Should I have to check out?
No.
Nope.
But
yeah, some
six. Whatever. I'm not a mathematician.
Mathematician.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah. Mathematician.
Okay, so it didn't have the greatest chassis rigidity. Like,
no.
When I was,
I'm sure the 82 Trans Am wasn't great on its own.
I mean, this is a hard top. I don't know. It's a modernish car, but like, I guess just the sheet metal was so thin that. Whenever on my route home from work, there was like a frost heave or a crack in the pavement or something in the middle of a curve in the road. And so like if I had the suspension loaded up in that corner and I went over that bump, the whole thing would shake and wobble. It felt like.
Yeah.
I think it had rear drums. I don't remember exactly. Maybe it had discs all the way around. I figured out why I had it, that it had an interference engine with a timing belt.
Bad combo.
Which means, yeah. And the previous owner's like, I don't know if it's ever been changed. So if the listener doesn't know, that means like if the belt breaks, your engine smashes itself to pieces. So my dad knows a guy that's like an amateur mechanic, or I think he actually did go to school to be a mechanic, but he was just working out of his home and he's like, you know, I'll give you a good deal on a timing belt replacement. And this is like before I learned how to work on cars. So I'm like, yeah, sure. Okay, go ahead. I got it back. And then like a week later, it started making this rattling sound.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but maybe you should look at this. So I drove it all the way back to Colorado Springs with it making this rattling sound. And he's like, yeah, sorry. I forgot to tighten up one of the bolts on the water pump.
Wait, he just remembered that?
And I don't know exactly what, like, he got it, you know, everything taken apart, and he's like, yeah, this, you know, the water pump is rattling off the engine. I never saw what exactly was happening with that, but, yeah, it didn't sound good. So, I mean, other than that, it was actually one of the most reliable cars I've ever owned. Basically just put, you know, gas and oil and drove it. I did have it was like some sensor in the engine failed, but only when it rained and it got wet. So I'd just be driving around and hit a puddle and it would go, and the engine would die. And I don't think I ever fixed that. I think also the anti-lock brakes stopped working for some reason. And what else? The front bumper started falling off. Like one of the fasteners just broke or fell off or whatever. So I just found some random, you know, nut and bolt and did it up, and hopefully that stayed on there for the next owner. Oh, but speaking of using your car to transport things, I once, you know, like the rear seats folded down so you could like pass stuff through the trunk or whatever. And one time I went and bought a scooter and put it in the back. So it was I believe it was a 1986 Honda Spree 50cc scooter.
Nice.
It was, I remember it was some old brick apartment building on Colfax near downtown, you know, back before that area got gentrified.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this lady that was like chain smoking and like had the moped parked inside.
Nice.
And so like when I got it back and got it running, it had foam insulation on the body panels that enclosed the engine.
to like cut down on noise and stuff. And whenever that got warm, it started smelling like tobacco.
Oh God.
What else did I do with that car? I got snow tires for it with, you know, another set of wheels. And, you know, they're, I'm like, yeah, that's 4x100. It'll fit. And I forgot about the centerbore diameter.
Mm.
And so it didn't fit. And I had to get wheel spacers for it.
Nice.
And I'm not sure if they were totally centered on the thing. But, I mean, I was going slow in the winter anyway, so.
Yeah, fuck it. It's fine.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that got me through my going back to tech school until I basically got more in grants and scholarships than my tuition was. So I had a few thousand dollars left over at the end of my tech school and was able to buy my Miata. So that car sort of indirectly helped me buy my shitbox Miata that we talked about in the last shitbox.
For any of our younger listeners, if we have any, there was a point in time where school was cheap enough that if you played your cards right, you could do it at a profit.
Yeah.
I knew one or two other people who were actually like slick enough that they did that, like applied for just every scholarship and grant and effectively got paid to go to college for a couple of years.
Yeah. Thanks, Obama.
Oh, this was like before Obama.
No. Oh, I mean, when I was going to school, it was when Obama was in office.
Yeah. I guess so. I started school in, I started college in 2002. So, yeah, before Obama. Yeah. That was like middle of Bush. I remember. No. Yeah. Okay. It's all coming back to me. I don't think about the early 2000s a whole lot, but before Obama, that was still possible.
Yeah. But yeah, that's about all I have. I was thinking, I was talking about like, maybe I should turbocharge the engine on this thing.
Correct.
To make more
yes.
power. Because I'm like,
yeah,
you know, it's based off of a Mazda BP engine and there's turbo kits for that. You know, how hard could it be? But it's like 9.5 to 1 compression on those engines.
Ooh, yeah.
So I would have had to do like a, you know, head spacer or something like that.
Yeah.
Or run it on methanol ethanol. I ended up not doing that and just had a reliable car.
Lame.
Yeah, boring.
I know. part of me wants to, like, if I ever, like, won the lotto, go back and find a Kia Spectra and, like, you know, either put a fast Mazda engine in it or Mitsubishi Evo drivetrain.
Oh, hell yeah.
I think that would be fun.
Oh, yeah. Ultimate sleeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you are talking about, like, how your cars look stock earlier, I'm just like, man, sleepers are fucking cool. Who cares?
It's hard when you have a car that's kind of looks fast already, and then it's not fast stock, and you have to make it fast, and then, you know.
It just looks like it goes the speed it should go.
It still looks stock. Yeah, exactly. It's not exactly a sleeper at that point. It's just like, it finally looks as fast as it is.
I mean, I can't wait till I have the drag van on the road, and it's making a good 600 or 700 horsepower, and just looks like a shit heap 60s van.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
I mean, my MR2 is probably the least powerful car that I've ever owned, but I've gotten the most speeding tickets in it just because it has, like, a wing on the back and stuff.
Yeah.
Dude, I stand by the idea that, like, I don't get pulled over because I drive vans. If I'm doing 100 miles an hour in my fucking shit heap van, it just... Somebody sees it and they're like, that can't be right. It's got to be going like 50.
Well, cool. Any other shitbox stuff before we wrap up here? I guess...
I'm willing to bet that any of us could go on for hours about the shitboxes right. that we've been through.
I think it's time to wrap her up.
Yeah, I got to get some food in me.
All right. Well, I guess listeners, check out our social media. We'll put links in the description. Hit us up if you have ideas of future shows or stuff you want us to talk about.
Or shitboxes of your own.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, tell us about them. That's fun.
If you got cool stories of shitboxes, we'll read them out on the air.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. All right. Well, good night for now.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
You can tell a revolutionary, but you can't tell a revolution.
Poverty. 500,000 Americans at any given time are sleeping out under bridges and in gutters. Is that not violence? To force a human being to sleep in the fucking street while the rulers that dictate this entire system have 4 or 5 or 6 fucking houses? That's violence.
If you ain't first, you're last.